16. Mending Faces, L.J. Ludovici. Into the ward were carried men with broken faces, with jawbones that felt like sand under your fingers. Sepsis and bleeding caused numerous deaths. Many of these men could not utter a word, and lay wrapped in yards and yards of bandage. Some could not sleep. Many could not eat, and feeding was a slow business. Mirrors were absolutely forbidden in the ward. Gillies managed to keep up the spirits of these broken people, telling them he would soon have them looking as good as new, and promising he would give them new faces. He admits that at this stage the sum total of his knowledge was what he'd read in a book given him by an American colleague in Paris. But the real source of his confidence was a cheerful character and a deep love of the work he was undertaking. A great Hindu surgeon, Susruta Samhita, whose writings have come down to us over 2,000 years, described an operation for repairing a disfigured nose. The method still employed is so like his that it is to this day known as the Hindu method. A flap of skin was cut from the forehead and folded over the damaged nose. Late in the 16th century, we have one of the greatest names in the history of plastic work, Gaspari Tagliacozzi, professor at the University of Bologna. He described the arm flap graft for nose and ear, which meant that the repair was done by cutting an area of skin out of the arm and using it to cover the damaged nose or ear. We restore, repair, and make whole those parts of the face which nature has given, but which fortune has taken away, not so much that they may delight the eye, but that they may raise up the spirit and help the mind of the sufferer, wrote Tagliacozzi. In 1792, a Dr. James Findlay reported in the Madras Gazette how an Indian surgeon reconstructed a missing nose. In the course of the years, the art of skin grafting and of bone grafting developed. New methods of cutting thin sheets of skin for grafts were also discovered. Nevertheless, plastic surgery, until the First World War, was based on no constant principles, and there were no pictures or diagrams properly arranged to show how things were done. Gillies practically started from nothing. During the First World War, explosives of a power hardly dreamt of before were being used. The wounds they caused were more serious than surgeons had ever had to face. They created tremendous opportunities and tremendous problems. As an artist, Gillies saw the plastic surgeon as a sculptor. His materials, instead of being wood or stone, were living skin, bone, fat, and muscle. He employed them to remake people. The term reconstructive surgery, therefore, describes well what he was trying to do.
Tim,